I've got about 20 minutes, so I'm going to go through some slides very quickly. Apologies for looking dishevelled. I made the stupid decision yesterday to try to get to the Latitude Festival by public transport from Oxford, which is possible. I got there last night. What I hadn't banked on is that, of course, everybody leaves this morning and nobody decided to put on a single extra train carriage. So it's an interesting experiment in how the middle class of North London behave when they are packed that closely to each other. And I discovered I'm now old enough to legitimately sit on a seat and not feel the need to give it up. I'm going to tell you a little story about Oxford, which is the city I live in and the city I grew up. The point of telling you this is I think it can be extrapolated. Oxford is a very small city. It's a city that's been strangely constrained by a very tight green belt imposed after the Second World War. It's a city with the highest house prices in the country, 16 times average earnings, and it's a very, very congested city. The way you can tell it's congested is if you leave it in 1986 and come back in 2013 and discover that the Ring Road is a traffic jam, whereas it used to flow. And it's also a city in which lots of things change. The middle has been pedestrianised. There are cycle lanes all over Oxford which didn't used to be there. But there's a population who think that nothing changes because they don't go away for 30 years and then come back. It's also a 20-mile-an-hour city. I'm going to show you a few census maps of the whole of the south and the whole of the north, and I'm going to concentrate about cycling. This is an atlas called People and Places, which was published a few months ago about what the 2011 census revealed about us, with a whole section on transport. This is the most boring slide I've got, but if any of you are analysts, you'll recognise this kind of thing. ONS, who have of course suffered cuts like everybody else, make repeated mistakes, and on their commuting data they made one mistake, and you've got to be careful about it. About people who work from home, and people who sometimes use different modes of transport. There's a map of the south of England for you. You have to have very good eyesight from the back to see it. It's stretched, so it's proportional to people. So we are here in the heart of London, and I'm talking about this little place here, squeezed between Birmingham and London. This shows the proportion of people who cycle to get to work. As you'll know, this is now Cycle Central. I got a shock a few years ago, maybe 7 or 8 years ago, when I was in Whitehall, when I got a flashback to being 6 and 7 years old, because I was in Whitehall waiting to cross the road and there were too many cyclists to allow me to cross it. The last time that had happened in my life was when I was 6 or 7 trying to get to school in Oxford, because there used to be 30,000 car workers in Oxford and most of them would cycle because they didn't have a car to get to the car works. But there's the London centre, this is Cambridge, this is Oxford. The rest of the country is largely bereft of cycling as a normal mode of commuting. The league table for cycling has Cambridge first, the Isle of Scillies, which is Scilly second, and Oxford third, then Hackney, then York. And this is the change. The whole point of taking censuses is to tell us how things are changing. Otherwise we wouldn't bother taking a census. We're planning on moving, or the government is planning to move to an administrative census based on administrative data by 2031, maybe a dual but slightly dodgy census in 2021. That won't let you find out anything like this. Huge number of things you're not going to know in the future if we do this. All the red areas are areas of declining cycling, because there are two stories going on in Britain. There is the old Britain, where people are still giving up their bikes and often getting their first car. And there is a cosmopolitan, if you like, Remain vote Britain, where there's increasing cycling. The connections, it is interesting, Cambridge, Oxford, London, increasing. And you're not interested in numbers, so I won't show you that. Here's what the north of the UK looks like when you stretch it by population. If you want to think people, you want to start forgetting about the mountains and the areas without people. You want to get an idea about where people live. And that's the map of cycling in the north. Essentially it's York, Edinburgh, and Hull. Hull used to be very good for cycling, very flat, very poor. People in Hull finally have got second-hand cars, the stereotype. I'm afraid geographers do stereotype a lot, but most stereotypes tend to have a grain of truth in them. Far too much text there, let's zoom forward. And there's the decline in the north. So if you think that cycling's on the rise, you're wrong. In most places, cycling is becoming rarer, particularly for children. People are not going to risk their kids on bikes. The biggest killer in this country between the ages of 5 and 25 is the car. That isn't going away. It reduces somewhat when the price of petrol goes up. But because other forms of death become more rare more quickly, the car remains our most deadly item for young people. Largest falls in Boston, in Hull, in Fenland. Again, it kind of fits with the vote, but I'll try not to mention the vote again, maybe towards the end. Transport planning is delegated to the county in Oxfordshire. Oxford is a beautiful example of repeated errors in transport plans. Some of you may be aware of the plans in the past to put a road through Christchurch Meadow. There's currently a plan to dig a tunnel under the city so that people can get their Range Rovers from one side to the other side faster. The county is conservative, the city is Labour. The county dislike not travelling fast. In the county's transport plan, there is bus wash and cycle wash. The beginning of the plan begins with about a fifth of the plan being all about how much the county loves bikes. But it's a complete lie. There's a pledge to build six routes for bikes with various dates. Those dates have been missed. There's a pledge to support buses, which is a bit less of a lie because you can see the need to support buses. But three quarters of the plan, the back three quarters of the plan, is all about helping people drive faster and more in cars. And there's even a proposal in the plan hidden away very carefully to build two new roads across Oxfordshire, which would be amusing, as George Monbiot has written, because Oxfordshire is the centre of where road protesters grow up. So you don't have to travel down to Southampton or across to the M11 if you do decide to build any roads in Oxfordshire. It would be an immensely silly thing to do. Cycle premium routes have been promised. As yet, none have been identified. The kind of thing that has happened recently, I don't know if you can see, if you ever arrive in Oxford Station and decide to take one of our version of the boys' bikes and drive and cycle to the university, you'll be invited to place your bike in this little death zone that our planners have recently designed. The cars coming around here enter it routinely. We really do make a mess. This Cambridge is even worse, cycling from the station in Cambridge, when you're squeezing with a gap that's too small for you with a bus and traffic going. But I'm sure a lot of you are familiar about this in London. But Oxford's nice and easy. Ring Road, around the outside of Oxford. Seven arterial routes, really easily named. London Road goes to London, Cowley Road goes to Cowley, Iffley Road goes to Iffley, Abingdon Road goes to Abingdon, Botley Road comes to Botley, Bamboo and Woodstock Roads. Right? Almost like a kind of noddy example of a planning problem. Medieval city, not designed for cars. City absolutely filling up with people, chock-a-block. And not just residents, enormous numbers of tourists, and those numbers of tourists are about to expand dramatically for many reasons. The world's middle class are growing. Where do you go after London and Paris? But also it's suddenly become 20% cheaper to come to Oxford as a tourist and as a student, except we have nowhere to put them. This is my proposal for where the county should put its premium cycle routes. It's cheap, and I think you're going to have to plan things in future that are going to be incredibly cheap. My suggestion is you don't knock down any buildings, you don't do compulsory purchase, you don't do anything which is expensive. You simply make the arterial routes one way for motorised traffic. You put the motorised traffic in one lane rather than two, and you have much more room for bikes. This, of course, is hated by the minority of the population who drive. But these routes are often at a standstill, and if anything goes wrong in the Oxford transport system, the whole lot goes to a standstill because people try to rat run. This is a presentation I showed to the Civic Society. We have an interesting Civic Society in Oxford. Things are so bad that the Civic Society would actually like to do things like this. But there are other people who don't want Oxford to change at all. So my suggestion is that the London Road actually goes to London. If you're coming back from London on the bus, it has to come in another way. The Iffley Road comes in from Iffley, the Abingdon Road goes down to Abling, the Botley Road comes in from Botley, and the Banbury and Woodstock Roads go one way. And you have a lot more road space for bike lanes. I'm a geographer, which means I dabble in many things, which means I know very little about anything in detail. I don't particularly care whether you put a tiny curb or separate or how you do it, or whether it's like Copenhagen, where you take your life in your own hands when you try to walk across the road because there are so many bikes. I just know that that's where the space is that would allow us to put more people than we currently have, and I know that we currently are saturated with people. Seven arterial roads doesn't work very easily if you're making them one way. The Cowley Road is the obvious road to semi-pedestrianise. It is a very dangerous road at the moment. You have to be able to get everywhere by car because some people cannot walk, but it should be the slowest way to get anywhere. Where did I get the idea from? Because I spent 10 years living in Sheffield. In Sheffield, if you drive into the city in the inner ring road from any direction, you have to drive back out that way again. It's very well designed, but it's a different mentality. And you can go further. Why do we have a ring road with cars going at 50 to 70 miles an hour around it, with settlements just outside, with children crossing? We're just building for the first time. For 20 years, Oxford's built nothing. And for the first time in 20 years, it's building 800 homes. They're being built just here. There will be 800 children there. There is no secondary school. They have to cross this road. There'll be a traffic light. Until two children die, they won't do anything else. That's the way our particular planning of road safety goes. I do think that this is likely to change, not least because the Prime Minister's father died just here. I don't think we are going to accept the kind of risks that we've been willing to accept in recent years. And that's one reason for suggesting this. Now, connecting it to people. I'm not that interested in transport. I'm interested in housing. And the reason I got into this is that you can't add any more housing to Oxford unless you sort out its transport. And I'm interested in social division, and I'm interested in schools. Oxford has the widest social division, I think, of any city in Europe when it comes to education. This school, which used to be called Pierce School, is now called the Academy. All the schools in the bottom half of the league table have changed their name since I was a child. None of the schools in the top half of the league table have changed their names. This school has a GCSE pass rate of 28%. It's in the bottom 25 in the country. Most of the other 25 are in pit villages and other very poor parts of the country. That school's in Oxford. No middle-class children go to that school now. A few used to. A few years ago, just two children went to university from it. That's where it is. The Catholic school is here. 47% pass rate. You send your child to the Catholic school, not because you're a Catholic, because you become a Catholic to avoid sending them to that school. Old Oxford Boys is there, 58% pass rate. Almost no academic would allow their children to go there. Here's Cheyne School, 1,387 children. Absolutely packed, because people move here to try to avoid these schools. And you can't move the children around the schools. You can't have different lessons in different schools. You can't have Spanish being taught in one sixth form and so on, because the city is too dangerous to tell children to get on bikes and cycle around it. And this is despite the fact it is a highly cycling city with a huge number of undergraduate students cycling. They're quite dangerous. Most of them, it's the first time they've ever got on a bike is when they're 18 in Oxford Brookes and my university. Many of them have to learn which side of the road to cycle on because they've come from the mainland. So be very careful if you're ever in Oxford in October when people are doing this, but they won't let the children. Charwell, the Tatler recommended posh comprehensive, where my children of course predictably go. 1,800, absolutely packed. You know, you should know all these things. When you have socially divided cities, all kinds of things go wrong. Matthew Arnold over there on the other side. And the hub school, if you were going to try and do something to reduce the educational divisions in Oxford, the school that's in the middle, if children could actually cycle around this city because there were two cycled lanes on one side of the road and two cycled lanes on the other, and traffic, motorised traffic, moving calmly in the middle, the hub school is modelling college, which says it wants to work more with the state sector, but nobody's given it a real challenge. But it can't, because of the transport system of Oxford. I've got 5 minutes left, so I'll speed up. That's the kind of more jazzy produced version of this. It doesn't look so frightening if you make the arrows smaller and cut off a few streets here to show how you'd stop people commuting on that particular road out. This is showing two cycles going in one direction, two cycles and a motorised buggy going in the other direction. People can overtake on bikes, and traffic just going one way in the middle. You might think this is very peculiar to Oxford, but there are other cities like this. York is like this, Cambridge is like this, and of course London is like this. You want to get to a situation where people are not frightened to use the bike and they're not in danger. And the way you measure the danger is, how does it compare to every other danger that affects your lives? All the diseases and cancers that might affect you at that age. And then you'll see that there really is a problem. The thing I want to end on, though, is what do all these people in Oxford do at the weekend? Remember, it's the third highest cycling city in the country. So do they cycle out to see the countryside in Oxfordshire? They don't. And why does that bother me? Because for 10 years I lived in Sheffield, and if any of you know Sheffield, there's a Peak District, and what they do with the Peak District, they turned all the old railway lines into cycle tracks so you can cycle out across the countryside. Move down to Oxford, and not only do you lose the mountains and the hills — there's not much you can do about that, we can't build mountains and hills — but you also lose access to the countryside other than driving out. Here, if any of you are interested, are where, if this ever goes ahead — it won't go ahead now because we're bankrupt as of the 23rd of June, but if it were to go ahead, this is where the sneaky road proposal was put towards the back of the Oxfordshire report. You really had to look very hard to find it. If anybody wants these slides, I'm very happy for you to have them. This is the kind of text that comes from the report, and I'm suggesting if you're people-centred, you can look at things differently. Pie in the sky. What might somebody see who leaves Oxford now at the age of 18 and comes back in 30 years' time? Because as I said at the beginning, things do actually change. Well, how could people get out into the countryside? My suggestion is you build the kind of paths that people from Sheffield have, better quality cycle paths out into the countryside. You don't want to be going along roads. You want them completely separate from roads, and you want them going fairly directly to where you're trying to get to, because you don't like cycling further than you have to do, because it's hard work. So a little map I've drawn just to cause mischief in the city, that gets published I think next week, shows long distance cycle paths going out to the major commuter towns. 40,000 people commute over the Greenbelt of Oxford every day to get into work. We have 1.5 2-hour commutes of people sitting on buses from Watlington and Wallingford to get in. You could make cycle lanes. Okay, only the young and the fit would cycle that far. But why can only Freiburg in Germany have this kind of thing? Why can only the Dutch think about it? If you were going to do it, where would you do it in England? And it's a lot cheaper to build 6 cycle lanes out into the countryside. You need right to roam legislation. You don't buy the land off the landowner. You just put it over and give them the responsibility to look after it, like footpaths. It's a lot cheaper than actually building more 4 or 6 lane motorways across the county. Why can't we have more houses around the edge of Oxford? The original reason which this map shows, and if the key will give you a better idea, is that there's a lack of sewage, water, electricity and gas connection. That was the reason for Oxford having a tight green belt. Oxford has green land within 2 miles of its centre. It has a golf course to the west, within 1.5 miles of the centre. So you need housing there, where people can cycle in. You don't want so many people trying to get in from a great distance. And if we are to take more students, now that overseas fees have dropped by 20%, and now that we've lost at least 20% of our research funding, potentially, Oxfordshire, you may not know, receives the highest European Science Foundation funding of any region in the whole of the European Union. We're going to have to do something to make up for that money. That's before we even worry about the car plant, which is owned by BMW, which runs on 1,100 robots, each the correct size to fit in a container and take to Germany. BMW wrote to all their workers, 3,000 workers, saying that they did intend to move if the vote went a particular way. Why might they move? Because half of those 3,000 workers are Eastern European men. That's partly why BMW are in Oxford. We're going to have to do things differently in the future, and we're going to have to do them with little money. Just in case you don't know, other countries do things differently. We dabbled with this a few years ago and our magistrates couldn't stand it. But I've just told you that cars are the biggest killer of 5 to 25 year olds. In Finland, if somebody speeds, they can be fined £80,000 for speeding, depending on their salary. In Switzerland, somebody drove his Ferrari 3 times through a village at high speed. He was fined £180,000 equivalent. But my favourite is a footballer in Germany who was fined €500,000 recently for speeding. You can do things very differently. We're not becoming more European at the moment, but the idea that it is not possible to do this is silly when you just look at what other countries actually do. Marco Rus, €540,000 fine. Didn't even hit anybody. He's just driving under the influence. It's a real incentive not to be dangerous. That you can't see is a notice asking the young men, mainly young men in 1968 in Oxford, not to park their cars at a way which would inconvenience local residents. Oxford undergraduates have been inconveniencing local residents for many decades. And finally, my last slide on time. This is the city that I just told you about. This is the 1927 plan for the city of Oxford. The plan shows green areas, which are the flooded areas, the areas that may flood. They got that wrong. It's a much bigger part of Oxford can flood. Although we are currently almost got £100 million to build a flood relief channel here to send the water very quickly down to Reading, to flood Reading. Reading will then build a flood relief channel, and then we can take out West London. There are other ways of doing this. The other way of doing this is you look upstream and you look at what the farmers have been doing very sneakily to make sure they get the water off their land so it gets down faster. But that wasn't the reason for showing you this 1927 map. The reason for showing you the map, so I just told you we've built 800 houses here, the first building in 20 years in Oxford. All this area was designated for housing in 1927. And it's circular. Why is it circular? Because the main mode of transport in 1927 was the bike. I honestly think you can be very green about it, but I'm just looking at what's cheap. The price of petrol is about to rise by 20-25%. The country is poorer. The housing crisis isn't going to go away, although house prices should become cheaper in Oxford. We are going to have to do something that makes us money. Bringing in researchers and students and expanding one of our productive towns is likely to be one of those things. But you cannot add building to the city of Oxford if you don't sort out its roads, and you cannot sort out its roads unless you take more space for walking and cycling and less space for impatient businessmen who seem to think that if it's 20 minutes longer to get to where they want to get, the world has ended. I honestly think we've got to the point where that kind of thinking has to end, forgetting completely about our carbon footprint. Thank you very much for that.